Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friend, my partner in radio, Ronald J. Martin. Baby, it's just you and me today.
Just you and me.
Pipes just gone, pipes.
The dynamic pipes duo. Doing, I know.
The dynamic duo. Gosh, we're dynamic this morning too,
I know,
aren't
man.
We?
It's kind of like our old school radio days way back in the day. Way back in our Fort Wayne days.
Oh, gosh, Fort Wayne, dude. Don't get me started on that city of dreams. My goodness. Hey, regarding those old radio TV days, do you have the lights turned off in your studio so that you can't see anything?
100%.
Is it super dark in there?
And I got like a camera recording the whole thing, obviously, because I can't. Obviously, baby, I can't do this without, you know, having a full video recording.
Absolutely. Well, and as a radio pro, you just kind of go back, you review it, you make sure you
look. Absolutely.
Yeah, looked and sounded.
Sending in all my micro edits to our editor.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? No, I mean, that's just what pros do, and we are nothing if not radio pros. And as such, we are aligned, as it were, with a huge media conglomerate. Is it lucrative? Not really. Are we still waiting around often to get paid? We are. But we're gonna take a short break, baby, and let that company run some ads.
Yes.
We'll be back in 2 and 2.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
All right, we're back, baby. How about that? How about that vibrant conversation we had off the air about higher education?
Oh man, it was what's the word? Tintillating? No, is that even a word?
Yeah, tintillating. The word is scintillating or titillating.
I know. That's a word that's never. You know, after all this time in seminary, I still haven't learned what that word means. So
that's okay. They didn't go over. Scintillating at seminary,
but they did tell me tintillating is a word, so there you go.
Yeah. I bet they did. Yeah, we'll have to talk to Jared about that one. But baby, just thinking about college made me think about college movies, which made me think about Good Will Hunting.
Oh yeah,
which is on my Mount Rushmore of college movies. It's Affleck and Damon, young Affleck, young Damon. Doing what they do best, which is being together movies. And it made me think of the movie Air.
Oh yeah.
Which is upcoming, which seems to have like engaged and delighted you in sort of weird ways. And you have this thing where like you hate sports. You're somebody who says the word sports ball, which makes me actually want to kill you.
Let's be honest. You're generalizing. I really don't say that. I know that's a word that irritates people, and I actually do love sports. Yeah. I just love one sport. I just don't love ball sports. That's all.
Yeah, you love one sport, but
to be fair,
you know the movie Air is sort of predicated on the idea of ball sports.
It is.
But you do love sports movies. You love Jerry Maguire. You love, you know, boxing movies, Rocky and Creed. And, what is it about the movie Air? And we're going to use this little Air discussion is going to go like 3 minutes, and it's going to be the appetizer for a longer discussion. And it's going to be sort of us like putting a broader face on something that we want to talk laser specifically about. But what has you excited about the movie Air?
Well, I love one of the things you get sometimes with sports movies is like they're like feel good movies, And mm-hmm. you don't see a lot of feel good movies coming out these days, right? Where it's just, there's not a lot of controversy in it. It's just a really good, well told story. And what I like down on your luck story. So I like the underdog coming up, the guy that's against it. Kind of like the rookie where you got Robert Redford.
Yeah.
He just, like, everything went wrong and he makes a comeback. And in the end, it doesn't turn out exactly how he wanted it or everybody wanted it, but it turns out okay. And there's like a redemptive aspect to it. So I love stories where the guy that didn't get the breaks that he thought he was going to get comes back in the end. And if he doesn't get all the victory, he does okay. And there's something about that. I could watch that story all day. I love it.
No, you're right. It's fun. And it, like, baked into that story often is like the guy who takes a gamble on a big idea.
Yeah.
Right.
100%.
And I mean, it was cooked into Jerry Maguire in the sense that, you know, Jerry in the first act, he has this moment of like conscience where he's like, wait a minute, I'm a scumbag. I hate my business. I hate the people in my business. And all of his clients leave him and he gets fired except for Rod Tidwell.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know what? I'm going all in on this one client and it works out. And I think there's something about that energy, and Air will bring that energy in the sense that, you know, it's all about Nike's kind of ascension in the basketball shoe market and going all in on Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be really fun. And what I like about it at a base level is that it's hopeful, and what it makes people believe is that, like, I can have just a messy, half-baked, I have no clue what I'm doing, idea and dream, and like somehow all the pieces can come together and this thing can actually work.
Exactly.
It's like what we're all doing in life, because none of us know anything. None of us know even, we don't even have a clue about half the things that we do that people think we have a clue about. And and so those stories kind of represent just really everybody. And then some people just take those ideas to the moon, right? And they become billion-dollar ideas like Air Jordans. And then other people just, like, find their way in life and they do okay. And it, it doesn't bring them that level of notoriety, but they do okay and they found their niche and they make it happen, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, we're kind of floundering about waiting for it to happen to us, you know? And from time to time, it's like reassuring to see that it can happen for people.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's just so fun. It's so fun.
It is fun.
And then I love seeing, I also love this. I also love seeing actors that usually play successful people kind of play like everyman characters that are just kind of bumbling their way. I think that's why, I think that's why Jerry Maguire to me is still the best thing Cruise ever did, because it's one of the only movies where he ever plays a down on his luck guy. And again, I know you could say, well, Mission Impossible, it's like, no, but he's like high level, like, you know, that whole, you know, working in that agency. So
yeah,
just
like saving the world every episode
or
whatever.
Yeah. This is a guy that just like makes it, you know, writes this, you know, this dumb memo. It gets him fired and he has to crawl his way back, you know, and even Cruise couldn't have had himself in like a low level sports agency. It still has to be the premier sports agency in the world. But, you know, like, so even Cruise, you know, he can only stoop down so low.
Right. But, he can only be so vulnerable, you know,
because
he's like the guy in your.
Yeah, he's not. A
he's like the guy in your small group where like, everybody's going around like confessing like real deep sin. And Maguire's the one who's like, well, you know, I've struggled a little bit. Like, I yelled at my kids 3 weeks ago, you know?
Right.
And,
we opened up like 4 new branches of the company, of the million-dollar company I started last week. And I'm just really struggling with like guilt, you know? And and you're like, okay.
I'm struggling with the anxiety over how I'm going to invest all my money.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's like, Tom Cruise. That's TC.
That must be really hard for you.
Yeah. Sorry, Tom.
Dude, here's another thing about that movie that I'm really looking forward to. It's going to be rooted in the early 80s.
Yeah.
Which means we're going to get some incredible fashion, some great glasses, lots of like cigarette smoking indoors. It's just going to
1984, man. It's primo 80s, you know what I mean?
Oh, it's primo 80s, dude. Old phones.
Oh yeah.
Like dudes dressing up for work still.
Oh, 100%.
Like, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I can't wait to like, I find myself more and more drawn to media that like happens before in time periods before the internet. Like, we're watching this. If you ever watch this thing on Hulu, it's about James Franco's in it, and he goes back in time to like try to prevent the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah,
have you seen this thing?
I've seen it advertised. I haven't watched it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man. Mm. It's really fun because you spend the majority of it in like 1962 or whatever.
Oh wow!
And yeah. It's fun to be in that world, and just see what life was like back then. And
I
think people
like
are gonna
that.
Have a similar experience with, you know, with the early 80s and in this movie era. I think the movie's gonna be huge. I think it's gonna be massive.
It just ticks all the right boxes for people right now. You know what I'm saying? It's not even summer yet, but it's like a great movie to kind of like tease up, you know, kind of the next season of life, and you know, everybody kind of kind of going into vacation mode and all that stuff. It's just great.
Well, and I think it's going to remind people that Damon and Affleck can do like real character work.
100%.
You know?
Yeah, 100%.
Which is going to be a blast, and I'm looking forward to it. And baby, speaking of character work, we have a big movie to talk about, you and me.
Mm.
It's a movie, it's a franchise that we love. It's Downton Abbey.
Mm.
And we're going to talk about it after this quick break.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolfe. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, baby, we're back. You and I, well-documented Downton Abbey enthusiasts.
Yes.
We've been in with this aficionados, experts. I mean, you could say that we both have kind of doctorates in Downton Abbey studies.
100%.
You know?
Not even a question, yeah.
We're Downton Abbey scholars. We're like presenting papers at conferences on this thing.
How great would it be if you knew that there were universities out there that just wanted you to talk about Downton all day?
How
exciting of a job would that be for you?
Oh, it would be incredible. I mean, I would take that job all day long. And here's the thing. Academia is so ridiculous that this actually happened with another movie. Do you know what movie I'm talking about?
Tell me.
Put yourself in the headspace of like 12 to 15 years ago.
Okay.
It was the Big Lebowski.
Oh, yeah.
And you had all these like postmodern like literary scholars writing white papers about the Big Lebowski, and the idea of that, this was like right at the beginning of me like adjuncting a little bit, so I was sort of like smart person adjacent at that time. Like I was like getting to know dudes who, you know, were like English professors or whatever, and we'd have these conversations where I'd be like, what are you working on? And they're like, they were like, I'm presenting a paper about the Big Lebowski at a conference. And I'm like, are you serious? That's a thing? Like,
wow.
Yeah. America is so prosperous that we have like, you know, degreed intellectuals writing papers about the Big Lebowski,
exactly.
Which struck me as like the single dumbest thing I'd ever heard in my life. And it still sounds exceedingly dumb. And yet like far dumber things have happened in academia in the past 15 years. But all that said, if someone were to pay us to be Downton Abbey scholars, we would take that job.
It's not even a question.
It's not even a question. No, it's not even a question. So Baby, the movie that I want to talk about is the most recent Downton Abbey movie, yeah. which I think dropped in 2022. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it then.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it because, I don't know, we were busy, whatever, all the usual caveats, but also because, like, the first Downton Abbey movie was really, to me, mediocre. Like, mm-hmm. it didn't blow my hair back at all.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the experience, right? Like, sitting with the set design and the characters for 2 hours was a fun experience. But the first Downton Abbey movie hit at a level where I was like, it felt like a third-tier episode. Like how every once in a while they would have one of those filler episodes yeah. where nothing really happened and you could tell they were just kind of mailing it in, and it felt like one of those.
It totally did. Totally agree.
But I enjoyed the second one more. Mm-hmm. It still wasn't good, right? It still wasn't... Like to me, it inched its way up to like second-tier episode status.
Yeah.
Where were you at on it, baby? I want to just talk about that
yeah.
movie.
Oh, baby, I think that's accurate. I think I 100% would put it in that same category. I don't know what it is. I feel like both of the movies feel like somebody just decided to write a parody on Downton Abbey and they made a movie, right? Like yes. that's how yeah. it feels to me. I don't know what they're doing wrong. I don't know if the dialogue, you know, when it's a 2-hour feature, like it just can't.
Yeah.
They're missing something. They got to cram too much into one thing because, you know, you can't wait for the next episode to wait to see how it's all going to work out, you know? So I don't know what it is. Maybe it's in the pacing. The dialogue always feels a little cliche, like, hey, look, we're Downton Abbey trying to talk like Downton Abbey people. That's how the movies feel to me.
And, yes. Yeah.
But I totally agree. So the first one was disappointing. The second one, I walked out thinking so much better, like still more of a second tier issue, but dude, leaps and bounds better than the first movie. Mm-hmm. Leaps and bounds. You know what I mean?
Dude, I agree. I totally agree. So to your point about the dialogue, I want to talk about that for a minute. And then I have an oddly specific pastoral question vis-a-vis Downton Abbey to lay on you. But I think... what made Downton Abbey the series so brilliant was that it was the ultimate exercise in like the slow burn, right? It was the slowest of slow burns mm-hmm. where, I don't know, you could do a 55-minute episode on like whether Mr. Bates is going to get like his leg brace taken off or like, you know, is Thomas Barrow going to steal bread out of the pantry? You know, and so you take this one kind of relatively small thing and you spend an hour and a half on it, and it becomes this rich character study where at the end of a season or at the end of the whole series, you feel like, gosh, I really know these people. You know, I know them. I know their motivations because I've sat with them for long periods of time where they're having real-ish conversations. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These movies, they feel like the kind of the Gilmore Girls version of actual Downton Abbey, where it's like, yeah, rapid fire, like machine gun dialogue. Every line is like a banger, you know? And I have a weird Lord Crawley thing. He was too skinny and too tan.
Oh,
you
man.
Know?
I'm so glad you caught that because I remember when he first came on the screen and I looked over at Big M with a big, I was like gasping. I'm like, dude, is he okay? Yes. Is he going to make it through the movie? Is he okay?
I know. Like, somebody get this man a meal, you know? Like, he looked like he was playing a movie star in a movie.
I know.
And, you know?
And did you hear that? Like, you know, like when guys have been a certain weight and then they lose a significant amount of weight and it changes their voice? His voice was different.
Yes, it was. Dude, everything about his bearing was different.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it didn't work.
Sit well.
Like,
did not sit well.
Part of his character working is... you know, he's British, like he's pale, he's a little bit shambling, he has the weight of the world on his shoulders, so he probably eats and drinks a little bit too much. So, yeah, you know, he just looked too elegant, too polished. It didn't work. It was so weird. I think another failing of these movies is it's such a massive ensemble cast that they feel like they have to give everybody their touches.
It's true.
Right? Yeah. So everybody gets to be on screen for like 2.5 minutes doing something. It seems like they always lean into the wrong characters and storylines. Like, I could absolutely care less that the chauffeur got married and is having a kid. Like, that means nothing to me. Like, to me, he was the most boring character in the whole thing.
You really hated Tom, didn't you?
Tom, I couldn't even remember his name. Yeah. Tom Branson.
I mean, he really is in the top three, like, most popular characters. I mean, really.
Dude, so take a couple of minutes and explain that to me, because I don't get it. But in talking with other people about it, I hear that from other people.
Well, to me, I liked Tom, and it wasn't because his character was so, like, standout or extraordinary, but he, again, it's kind of like going back to our sports movie stuff. He represented a guy that just, like, he worked himself through the ranks. He like, accomplished the impossible, man. He literally went from being, like, which wouldn't have happened in that time. It was probably so far-fetched if we got into the history of that culture. Mm-hmm. But to go from the chauffeur to literally being, like, the father of the granddaughter of the Earl of Grantham is,
right.
Maybe it's not that far-fetched. That stuff probably happened. But for him to, like, actually secure a place in the family where he was accepted, loved, and then contributed, you know, he ended up being, like, the agent of the estate. And you just kind of go, like, okay, like, dude, he literally crawled, you know, he came from nothing. You know, he literally crawled through the dirt and just pulled himself up, and he did all that. So, yeah, I don't know that his character itself was, like, you know, the most compelling character, but the storyline is, like, this is crazy.
Yes, no, it is. And, like, hearing you explain it makes it appeal to me. But for some reason, watching it happen didn't appeal to me.
No, I understand. I get that.
Yeah, I think it was because, he's kind of handsome. He seduces Sybil. That becomes his on-ramp. Here was my issue with Tom Branson, all right? If all of those things that you said were still true, but the one thing that you remove from his character is the kind of weird chip on his shoulder idealism that he has, like, in the first couple seasons. Like, the fact that he's basically become everything that he hated, that should be interesting, but when he does it, it's really boring. You know, like, because he still mentions it from time to time. Like, even in this movie, they did, like,
he still struggles. He's never.
They did two lines of dialogue, like, oh gosh, I'm still really conflicted about all this money here. Like, hold my champagne while I, like, you know, cliff dive into the French Riviera, you know, like, oh, but it's so hard. You know, it's like, at some point you got to stop talking about how hard
hold
it
my
is.
Champagne,
you know,
like, while I still decide whether I want to be a socialist or not, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm still reading these socialist pamphlets, you know, this stuff really appeals to me. It's like, no, it doesn't. So, like, his fakeness in that area, I think I have a problem with it, but.
No, I know. I mean, it doesn't add up. You know what I mean? There's the inconsistencies, you know, but it also, there was a compellingness to the fact that he was, you know, you're always wondering, like, what, like, okay, you know, focus out a little bit on just a personal level. It's like, everybody has certain ideals that they have to shift, that they have to let mature, that they have to let go if they want to function in the life that they've been. I mean, that's you, that's me, that's everybody, right? We, like, the things that we thought were so important when we were 21 years old, like, literally we look back on that and we go, well, that was insanely ridiculous. You know what I mean? Because it's just, it's maturation and all that stuff. But so there was something about that with Tom where he was constantly, that was being thrown in his face. Like, dude, I thought you were the, you know, you were the anti, you know, aristocracy guy, and here you are at the height of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like everybody is living a contradiction in some ways, you know?
Yes, that's right. Oh, that's interesting. How were you? This is the last kind of like shallow question, and then I'll hit you with the pastoral thing. On that moment, and I guess we're doing spoilers here, but the movie's been out for a year.
Oh, it's been out for a while.
Everybody,
it's all good.
Everybody who wanted to see it has seen it. Where were you, like, when it seemed like they were going to kill off Lord Grantham's wife? Did that do any? Did that move the emotional needle for you at all?
I mean, I'm trying to remember because I saw it right when it came out. I think I just. You know, I'm sort of detached from it now because I'm such a fan of the series. So these just felt like somebody was doing a play on Downton Abbey.
Yes.
You know, so it didn't really feel real to me. Whereas this, if that makes sense, the series feels real. So yeah, I just remember thinking, like, really, like, that seems like a really odd turn that they're gonna, like, why would they do that? It just felt like such an odd turn. Why would they? They're not gonna do another movie. The series is dead. Why would they find a need to let her go and just kind of propel everybody into like heartbreak. But I don't know how much it moved me emotionally though. You know what I mean?
Yeah. She's probably my second least favorite character after Tom Branson.
Really?
So yeah, like
Lady Grantham.
She's never kind of done anything for me.
Yeah.
And I think they just felt like they had to generate some conflict because I mean at the end of the day, this was a movie about like a rich family getting richer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At the end of the day, it was a movie about like people who already have everything getting another thing. And I think you had to like bake in some artificial conflict to make
you did
to make you feel sorry for them for a minute.
No, that's 100%. Yeah.
Here's a thing on that, and this is where I want you to get a little pastoral, because as I was watching this unfold in real time, I was thinking about the following thing. So the Dowager Countess dies, right? Which you knew this was going to happen. You knew that in one of these movies, she had to pass the metaphorical baton to Lady Mary, who I do really like. Where are you at on Lady Mary? Let's do 10 seconds on that.
Yeah, Lady Mary is probably my least favorite character.
Really?
I can't stand her. She's just her personality, her like snobbiness, her like her lack of like any emotional like EQ. It destroyed me. I literally can't stand Mary.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So I like, can't believe we've
so like when Tom had her when Tom and her sister had that moment at the end, you know, the end of the series with her, I was like, finally somebody tells Mary what everybody's been afraid to tell Mary, because she's. I just don't like bullies, and she just was a straight-up bully, you know?
Yeah, so. I guess she was.
I mean, dude, it doesn't mean you can't like her character. She drove me up the wall. I just wanted to see her. I wanted to see her just be taken down.
I guess my thing with her is that, especially in this movie, but maybe in the series, like, her conflictedness seemed the most honest. In the sense that, like...
I can see that. I wouldn't disagree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, she's kind of in this loveless marriage to this, you know, idiot who's like trying to drive race cars and is never around, and like, and her conflict vis-a-vis, basically, I have the talent to be mean and calculating in the same way that the Dowager Countess was, and I'm sort of at odds with it, but I sort of need to lean into it for the family, but also because it's what I enjoy, right? So, like, of all the character kind of plates that they're still continuing to spin, hers felt the most honest. And I mean, look, it was fun to see Molesley, like, get to write a movie, which was ridiculous.
It was
like,
so ridiculous.
Yeah, this guy that's been, like, I don't know, butlering and shining shoes is apparently, like, I don't know, J.J. Abrams. You know, he's, like, this incredible screenwriter. And it's like... Where did that come from?
Of course, but, it's Molesley. Of course,
of course, it's Molesley, and like he gets his lady, and so I guess of all the plates that they had spinning in that movie, that one felt the most honest. But here's my oddly specific pastoral thing, and this will take us to the end. So in that scene where the Dowager Countess is dying, they so sort of sanitized it. Right. So they're all up in this beautiful gilded room and everybody's like dressed for dinner. So they're all wearing like, you know, tuxedos and evening gowns. And they're all sort of gathered around the Dowager Countess. And she's like firing off one liners left and right, right up until the moment where she closes her eyes and then she's dead.
Yeah.
And to me, that was an example of Hollywood like. So sanitizing a thing that we should be at odds with, right? So as Christians especially, you know, death is this manifestation of sin and the fall, and it's ugly, right? And it's ugly to think about it and reflect on it, and we are to be at odds with it. And yet they made it look so sort of, I mean, they made it look like she was embarking on a cruise, right? like she was... You know, like boarding a ship and waving and like tossing a bouquet of flowers, and it was the most like gentle sort of nondescript death scene I've maybe ever seen in a movie.
Yeah.
And not that I'm arguing for I'm not arguing for something gross or something kind of over the top or whatever, but I again, it just seems so like the world to try to take something that we should be at odds with and make it look fine, you know?
Yeah.
Speak to that.
Yeah, it was, you know, on one hand, I felt like I got what they were trying to do. You know, they were trying to create an ending that could legitimately end the series, put everybody at rest. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the Dowager really was kind of in a sense, she was running the whole show. You know, it was it was really, you know, Downton was really her house. And I mean, she was really the one at the end of the day that was really the keeper of the traditions that was keeping those houses alive well into like the 20th century, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so to kind of put her to rest created this like, okay, the world can move on now, right? Whatever happens next. Yeah. It was the end of that era. And so I understand what they were trying to do with it. I just think it was, what's the word I'm trying to get to here? I just think it was, I think by the time you get to it, they did it in such a way, to your point, that they didn't allow you to like grieve for it in a weird way, you know, kind of to, I think to what you're saying, like they just, they made it as a matter of course, rather than allowing us to see, well, hey, what does it mean for someone from her era to die? What does it look like now? Like, do they all feel permission to like move more into the modern era because someone like her doesn't have to keep those traditions alive? Do they feel free now? We didn't get to see any of the implications of her death. So I don't know if it was just like, it was almost like treating the death in a way that didn't allow us to see what either good or bad would come on the heels of it, if that makes sense. I don't know. It's complex a little bit.
It does. Yeah, and it is. Do you feel like there for sure won't be another movie?
Well, you know, I think for a lot of the fans, you know, I mean, if you stacked it up, the Dowager was probably it's probably the number one favorite character of everybody in Downton Abbey overall. Yeah. You know, it's hard to argue with that, you know, but you know, because of her one-liners were legendary. So I don't know if people would even want to see a Downton without the Dowager. So what they could do, they could go origin story. They could bring it back to when Dowager was young and she had her husband. And I could see them like doing like early years Downton.
Oh, yeah. You know what? That's what they're going to do. Kind of like the reverse Yellowstone thing that you're seeing on like Paramount Plus or whatever, where it's 1823 and then it's 1923 or whatever. I would be in on that.
I'd be interested. And they kind of all different characters, so it wouldn't be the same thing at all, but
they kind of laid the groundwork for it in the sense that you got, so in the last two Downton Abbey movies, you sort of get like the dating history of the Dowager Countess, you know, you get like,
I know,
you know, the Russian guy that she was involved with and now this French guy that she was involved with, and like, you know, each of those things could be a season.
Oh, totally.
You know?
Yeah.
Which would be really fun. I would actually be in on something like that.
Well, and then you wonder about the writer too, you know, like these guys, I mean, he's done other stuff, you know, nothing of course has hit, you know, reached the heights of what he did with Downton, Julian Fellowes. And I wonder if like, hey, what if we did, you know, we started it at 1850 when the Dowager was just, she was coming into her kind of prime. And what if, you know, what if we did a series based on that, you know, like how would that be?
Yeah.
I mean, I would be super down with that, obviously.
I would too. I would too.
It would be totally different characters, obviously, all that stuff. But I mean, dude, that would really pique my interest, man. Downton the early years. You know,
well, and here's what would be fun about that. You would get to see like young versions of certain characters that we love, right? Like a young Mrs. Hughes, you know, a young Mr. Carson, a young Mrs. Patmore, you know, I mean, that would rip. That would be amazing.
Yeah. And you get to see Lord Grantham when he was maybe like a teenager, just kind of coming into his own with like society and like what his story was and what like, and how he, dude, eventually getting to where like he just married Cora for, you know, because of her money and how all the conflict with that. I mean, that there's so many stories that could be told that just they hinted at. Yeah.
Yeah, the conflict over Quora, like being an American and all the upheaval that caused in the family. Yeah.
Totally.
No, it'd be amazing.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Maybe they should hire us to write that.
They probably should.
That would be...
They probably should.
That would be our, like, making a fortune thing. It would be the equivalent of us, like, inventing Air Jordans. You know what I mean?
It would be our own Air movie.
It would be our own Air movie. Absolutely. Yeah, it would be amazing.
Matt Damon and Affleck could come out with a movie just called Abby, and it would be about us writing the early version of Downton. It would be incredible.
Yeah, dude.
You know?
Dude, Damon, like... Damon would play like young Lord Grantham and Affleck could be like young Mr. Carson. You know, he's got the same kind of coloring. He's a little bit taller. I love it. Let's
or Damon can just play you. Affleck can play me as they like try to get this script.
Yeah. So like a meta thing.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. A movie about the making of Abby.
Like
yeah.
Abby.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Abby.
Like
right.
These two,
right.
Like these two dudes, this professor and this pastor whose biggest dream was to write a Downton script. And it actually worked. Julian actually adopted the script, created Downton Abbey origin story. And it ended up being like the biggest thing, like network television, biggest thing, like, you know, paid television ever had.
Yes. Now, they are the right ages. Like, Damon and Affleck could play us.
Oh, 100%.
You know?
Yeah, 100%.
So, Damon and Affleck and their families, if you're listening, and we know you are.
Yeah, they are.
Let's make a deal. Let's make a Hollywood deal.
Yeah, let's do it.
And let's do it. Let's have some fun with it. Let's make a blockbuster picture together.
Yeah, there's no reason not to. And nobody's going to love Downton as much as we are. Right.
You know?
I guess we got to actually do the thing where we get the script published and they make it before Damon and
No, don't go defeatist on me, okay? Like I don't think we need to. I think we sell this thing as a concept. We sell it as a whole package, right? And this is the ultimatum. Damon and Affleck, if you're listening, you have 24 hours to make a motion picture with us.
Let's
make a deal.
Yeah.
Or else we're gonna walk away from the table. Okay. So this thing has a shelf life on it. And by the time you download this episode, you've got 24 hours.
Yeah.
And
we need to get on it, is what you're saying. We don't have a lot of time. We need to get on this.
We gotta get on it before somebody else does. I mean, our phones are gonna be ringing off the hook.
Yeah.
And
it's
baby,
true.
I hope one of those calls is from Damon and Affleck. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know.
You know?
I can see it happening. You know, I'm going to keep my schedule clear today, just in case.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Keep the schedule clear. Keep the phone lines open. You know, and let's make a motion picture together.
Let's make a deal,
baby. We've done what we always do on this program, in that we talked about a couple of movies and had a great idea, and you know, it's an idea that that won't happen, that won't make us rich. We're gonna get paid $150 in 6 months for this podcast and maybe make $7,500 together writing a book at some point. But it's fun to dream about Abby, the movie starring Damon and Affleck as us. I would watch that. Baby, we've done what we always do on this program. We've wandered to and fro throughout some topics, and until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
Hello, my name's Rachel Carmen, and I want to invite you to come over and listen to my podcast. It's called Real Refreshment. For years and years as a young mother, I chased after the wind, thinking that the world could offer me the refreshment I longed for. But it was only when I discovered it in the person of Jesus Christ that I really found refreshment. Come on over and join me as we dig into Bible study. I'll see you there.